This is your story. This is my story. But most of all, this is the greatest story ever told. This is God's story.
You are listening to Reverend Dr. Rob White from the AULC Ministries. You can find us on Roku, Amazon Fire TV, TuneIn Radio and TalkShoe. Be sure to visit www.aulc.us for more free resources.
This is your story. This is my story. But most of all, this is the greatest story ever told. This is God's story. In the days when judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, so a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech, and his wife's name was Naomi. The names of their two sons was Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah. They went to Moab and lived there. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, and one was named Orpah, and the other Ruth. After they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. When Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, she and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. When Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's home," but Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I'll be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me." When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her.
In the lower story, all hope is lost for Naomi. She moved from Bethlehem to Moab with her husband to weather the storm of a famine raging in the land around them at the same time as Gideon's story from the last chapter. Not long after they arrive, her husband dies, but she still has her two sons to care for her. While they are in Moab, they both marry Moabite women, and 10 years later, tragically, both of her sons die. In complete emptiness, Naomi decides it's time to go back home to Bethlehem. Her daughter-in-laws decide that they want to go. She begs them not to come, that they will have a better life if they stay in Moab. She finishes her speech with these painful words, "No, my daughters, it's more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has gone out against me." In the lower story, we see that she had lost all hope, and she felt it was all a result of the Lord's doing in the upper story. Naomi was able to convince the one daughter-in-law to stay, but the other, Ruth, insisted that she go. Here's how she put her decision. "Where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God." She has certainly chose the road less traveled. Life will be extremely hard for Naomi and Ruth. They will likely live in poverty the rest of their life. And to make matters worse, Ruth is a Moabite. The Moabites had oppressed the Israelites for 18 years before Ehud the judge delivered them. In the lower story, there was little chance that she would be accepted. Yet out of deep love for her mother-in-law and her well-being, this is the path that she chose. When Naomi and Ruth's sandals crossed into Bethlehem's borders, after being gone for over a decade, the women of the town exclaimed, "Can this be Naomi?" Naomi replied, "Don't call me Naomi. Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. The word Mara in Hebrew obviously means bitter. She is really convinced that God has orchestrated all of this, and he has, but she just doesn't know how the story will end. Now, Naomi owns land that her husband and sons used to farm. However, Naomi can't manage this property by herself, so she'll be forced to sell her land to pay the bills. And once she does, this will basically be committing her life to servitude. But the bigger, bitter pill to swallow is that the identity of a family is tied to land ownership. If her husband's land is lost, it'll be as though he never existed. So how will two poor single ladies make it in Bethlehem? Well, the Old Testament made a provision for the poor called gleaning. Those who owned land would send the harvesters into the field to gather the crop. Whatever little was left, they were to leave for the poor to glean. This is Ruth's primary way to help and to show love to her aging mother-in-law. She will do the gleaning and hopefully bring home enough for both of them to live on. She randomly picks a field to glean, and the owner shows her favor. Ruth is shocked that she is accepted as an outsider and even given protection. Here's what she asks the owner. Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner? He replies, I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with the people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. Ruth runs home with her arms filled with food and excitement and shares the story with Naomi over a Thanksgiving meal. Naomi inquires about the identity of the owner, and Ruth tells her that his name is Boaz. Naomi almost has a heart attack. Why? Because Boaz is a close relative. Why is she so excited about that? You see, there is a concept taught in the law, in Deuteronomy 25 to be exact, that states that if a man dies without an heir, the next of kin has the option to marry his widow, love her, take care of her, pay off the financial debts, and redeem the land. This man is called the kinsman redeemer. When they have a child, he is to deed the land to that heir in the name of the deceased husband, thus allowing his name to live on. Essentially, the kinsman redeemer takes on a huge risk and in the end doesn't increase his net worth a single penny. Naomi hasn't been this hopeful in a long time. She takes on the role of a Jewish matchmaker like the one you see in The Fiddler on the Roof. She tells Ruth to take a shower, and splash on some Chanel 5, and put on her Sabbath best. She was then to head over to Boaz's house that night, playing the part of Cinderella. She needed to wait until he had finished eating. You never, never approach a man with an empty stomach. After he went to bed, she was to sneak in and uncover his feet and lie down at the foot of his bed. Boaz would understand exactly what Ruth was doing. It was a nonverbal way of requesting marriage. Ruth does everything Naomi asks of her. And Boaz wakes up startled and asks who she is. She replies, I am your servant Ruth. Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a kinsman redeemer. Now the word for garment in Hebrew is the same word for wing. When Ruth first met Boaz, he referred to God's wing providing her refuge. Ruth was now asking Boaz to be God's wing to her, and he accepted. He exercised his obligation, and they were married. He not only bought Ruth's widow's land, but all his brother's land and their father's as well. Risking his own estate didn't add to his personal treasury by one light item, and redeemed them all. What drives a Boaz to turn his attention from his own selfish needs and wants to reach out to an outsider? Well, as it turns out, Boaz, the now strong, wealthy, respected man in Bethlehem, knew what it was like to be an outsider. We learn in another part of the story of the Bible that Boaz's mother is Rahab, the harlot. Rahab was the Canaanite prostitute that provided coverage for Joshua's spies when they were scoping out the land. She risked her life and as a result was adopted into the family of Israel. Boaz knew what it felt like to be an outsider at one time and had it in his heart to reach out to someone else in that same position. As it turns out, that person was Ruth. Ruth and Boaz had a little boy together. That little lad didn't know it yet, but he will inherit the land of his father, Mahlon, whom he never met. He will carry on that family name because of the kind act of Boaz. The women of the town said to Naomi, "Praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a kinsman redeemer." In the lower story, Naomi thought her life was over, that God had given up on her. Well, she was mistaken. Naomi took her grandson and cuddled him in her lap. The women of the town spread the gossip. Naomi has a son. What happened to the name Mara? Bitter. I guess it didn't stick. She went back to being called Naomi, which in Hebrew means beautiful. And beautiful her life became. She now had a son to work the land, which meant that the name of her husband, Elimelech, would live on. The little heir's name was Obed, which simply means worker. Sounds like a boring name until you understand the whole story. As overwhelming a turnaround as this is, the good news doesn't stop here. There's more going on in the upper story. At the end of the book of Ruth, we are given the genealogy of Boaz's family. It is here that Obed grows up and has a son named Jesse. Jesse then grows up and has a son named David. And 28 generations later, a little baby is born in a manger in the town of Bethlehem named Jesus. Jesus is the ultimate kinsman redeemer, and he came from the family of an outsider named Ruth. God was not only working above the scene of Ruth's life to provide her earthly needs in the lower story, he was working out his upper story plan with her in mind. He went out of his way to include an outsider, a pagan Moabite in the lineage of Jesus. Now that is extreme acceptance. In the lower story, their life seemed hopeless, with no chance of acceptance. In the upper story, God redeems their lives and accepts them as his own. You know, right now, your story might seem a little hopeless and bitter to the taste. But remember, if you love God and align your life to his purposes, as we learn in Romans 8:28, God is working it all out for the good. So wait patiently for God. Wait patiently for God to unfold his good plan for you.
Welcome. I am Reverend Dr. Rob White with the AULC Ministries, and I am here with this week's chapter of The Story. The past 3 weeks has been a bit harried for me, needless to say. When life gets in the way, sometimes, you just get ran over. This has been what's been going on and the main reason that I haven't been around. I am not trying to make excuses here. As you know, my wife and I are members of the Indiana Guard Reserve, and we had an in-person drill, for the first time in months due to COVID-19, and was not able to get back home in time to do a sermon. I had planned on doing a late sermon, during the following week, and again, got run over again, with work and family, and didn't get it done. Well, 3 weeks later, I am once again back in the saddle and bringing you up to date with another chapter of The Story. I will adjust the timeline to reflect the missing weeks, and this will place us somewhere around September finishing up our sermon series. Okay, enough digressing, here's today's chapter. The other day I heard a great definition of coincidence. Coincidence is when God decides to act anonymously. I like this definition a whole lot better than the typically understood of coincidence as being seemingly random events or happenstance. And what we have seen in our study in the story, we see clearly that there really is no such thing as a coincidence in the kingdom of God. God is at work accomplishing his upper story in and through the lower story in the lives of his people. We are learning that God is and always has been actively and personally involved in the daily affairs of his people as he seeks to draw people back into a loving relationship with him. Today we are going to see this demonstrated clearly in an ordinary person's life. In fact, if you would, let's turn in our Bibles to Ruth chapter 1. Today, we are looking at the book of Ruth. If Hollywood turned the book of Judges into a movie, it would be an action-packed movie with 6 sequels. each one filled with oppression from the enemy and the hero judges who would rise up to lead the armies of Israel to victory. On the other hand, if Ruth was made into a movie, it would be more like a movie you would find on the Hallmark Channel. On my wife's movie rating system, it would probably rate a 5-tissue rating. If we were to sum up the Book of Ruth in 3 words, it would be, Romance of Redemption. The Book of Judges records the faithlessness of the people of Israel who, time and time again, reject God and fall into idol worship and sin. On the other hand, the Book of Ruth shows us an oasis of faithfulness in a period of Israel's history that is marked by idolatry and unfaithfulness. In Judges, the Israelites were marrying foreign women and worshiping their gods. But here in the Book of Ruth, we see a foreign woman marrying a Jew and worship the God of Israel. Look here at Ruth chapter 1 verses 1 to 5. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and 2 sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech, his wife's name Naomi, and the names of his 2 sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah, and they went to Moab and lived there. We don't know exactly when these events took place. All we are told is that this in the days of the judges, there is the terrible famine. We have seen famines before in God's story, haven't we? Now because of this famine, Elimelech, his wife Naomi and their 2 sons pack up and they move to Moab. Remember last week we learned that the Moabites were one of the people that God had used to attack Israel. To say that the Moabites and the Jews didn't much like each other would be an understatement. But once there we read, 3 Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her 2 sons. 4 They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they had lived there about 10 years, 5 Both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her 2 sons and her husband. The Book of Ruth begins with tragedy and loss. Some have called Naomi the female Job. To start with, because of the famine, she and her family have to leave their people and travel to a land where people there don't like them very much, where they are not going to be accepted. Then she loses her husband and 10 years later her 2 sons die as well. She is left desolate. Without a husband or sons, there is not much hope for her or many options. She was in desperate straits, but hope is in the Lord. In Ruth chapter 1 verse 6 we read, when she heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, Naomi and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. Here is a glimmer of hope. The Lord had come to the aid of Israel and that the famine had ended. So Naomi decides to go home. Naomi tells her 2 daughter-in-laws that they should return to the homes of their mothers and prays that the Lord would give them another husband. In keeping with Middle Eastern customs, initially they both refuse and say that they will travel with Naomi. But Naomi insists, so Orpah agrees and returns to her own home. Ruth, on the other hand, continues to insist that she will travel with Naomi. And again Naomi encourages Ruth to return to her home as well. Then in Ruth chapter 1 verses 16 to 17, Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go I will go, and where you stay I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God my God. 17 Where you die I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if anything but death separates you and me." This statement of commitment is considered among the most beautiful in all literature, and there is no wonder that it is often included in many Christian weddings. Ruth's leaving meant that she was completing cutting off her ties with her family, from her nation and even her pagan gods. She is binding herself to Naomi, to her people and to her God. And in a step of faith, Ruth heads out into the unknown and uncertain future, and she too places her hope in the Lord. The story of Ruth, which begins with tragedy and loss, is in fact a story of hope. When we cannot see the hand of God, we can trust the heart of God. Well, the 2 widows return. Naomi and Ruth arrive back in Bethlehem. And it caused quite a stir. The whole village was talking about Naomi and this Moabite woman she brought back with her. Initially, Ruth would have been looked at as an outsider, a Moabite. She would not have been trusted or readily accepted. But then we see, God provides for the widows. At the end of chapter 1 we are told in verse 22, "So Naomi returned from Moab accompanied by Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning." In chapter 2 we discover that Naomi has a relative on her husband's side named Boaz. Boaz is called a man of standing or a mighty man of wealth. While this phrase suggests that he is a wealthy man, but it also implies that he is a man of character and fine qualities, a noble man. Now in those days there was no SSI, or welfare, no food stamps or even food banks for that matter. But God had a plan to meet the needs of the needed, the widows and orphans, those who needed help. You see, the Jews were instructed that when they went out to harvest they were not to glean all the way to the edges of their fields. When a field was harvested or a crop brought in, they were told to leave that which was on the edges for the needy to come along and harvest for themselves. To put this in modern day understanding, we are not to live all the way to the edges of our means. We are to leave some margin so we can have leftover to give to others, to those in need around us. If we glean everything for ourselves, if we live on everything we make, and for many beyond what we make, then we can't be used of God to help those around us who need our help. Anyway, this is what's going on here in the book or Ruth. Ruth and Naomi are destitute. Boaz and his men are gleaning the barley fields. Ruth goes out to glean along the edges, and as she is doing this, Boaz comes out to check on the workers and ends up checking out Ruth. He likes what he sees and he likes what he has heard. He hears from his foreman that Ruth has been there all day working hard. And he has heard the buzz around town how she has stayed with her mother-in-law Naomi and how Ruth has honored and loved her. So Boaz tells his men to leave a little extra for Ruth to glean. And he tells Ruth to stay in his field and even drink from the water jars that the men have filled. He is going above and beyond what was required of him in providing for the needy. When Ruth comes home, she tells Naomi all that had happened and shows her all the food she had brought home. When Naomi hears the name Boaz and she recognizes him as a close relative, a kinsman redeemer. A kinsman redeemer had to be a close relative who would be called upon to either 1. Provide an heir for a relative who died, Deut. 25:5-10.2. Redeem land that a poor relative sold outside of the family, Leviticus 25:25-28.3. Redeem a relative who had been sold into slavery, Leviticus 25:47-49. To do this, it would come at a great cost to the Redeemer. And this is what Naomi is going to have Ruth ask Boaz to do in Ruth chapter 3. Naomi tells Ruth in Ruth chapter 3 verses 1 to 4, "My daughter, should I not try to find a home for you, where you will be well provided for? 2. Is not Boaz, with whose servant girls you have been, a kinsman of ours? Tonight he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. 3. Wash and perfume yourself, and put on your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know you are there until he has finished eating and drinking. 4. When he lies down, note the place where he is lying. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down. He will tell you what to do. I am sure glad that some traditions and cultural norms have changed over time. But what's going on here is that this is in a way a marriage proposal. Naomi is telling Ruth to go ask Boaz to act as their kinsman redeemer. Ruth is really putting herself out there, opening herself up for the ultimate rejection. Can you relate to this? But Ruth does as she is told, and we read in Ruth chapter 3 verse 7-9-7, when Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet and lay down. 8. In the middle of the night something startled the man, and he turned and discovered a woman lying at his feet. 9. Who are you? He asked. I am your servant Ruth, she said. Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a kinsman redeemer. Boaz agrees to act as her kinsman redeemer, but there is one relative who is closer, one relative who according to the law has first option at redeemer Ruth, but if he refuses then Boaz is free to redeem her. So in chapter 4 Boaz goes out to the town gate. There, in front of the elders of the city, Boaz tells his relative that Naomi is about to sell a piece of land, and as the closest relative he has the first right of refusal. At first the relative says sure, he wanted the land. But keep this in mind. It is costly to be a kinsman redeemer. Because the land was tied into the promises of God, land ownership was very important to the Jewish people. There were detailed laws concerning land and ownership, inheritance and passing along of land from one generation to the next. But the first responsibility of the kinsman redeemer would be to buy back the land so it could be kept in the family. But then he would have to marry Ruth, and if they had a son, that son would not be his, but would be raised as if it were a son of Naomi, and he would inherit the land that has been bought back. In doing this, Naomi's family name would be kept alive. So to be a kinsman redeemer was costly, and there was no guarantee that you would get anything out of it. In fact, it could hurt your own children's inheritance. Needless to say, the closer relative opts out and lets Boaz serve as kinsman redeemer. Then we read in Ruth chapter 4 verses 13-17, "So Boaz took Ruth and she became his wife. Then he went to her, and the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. 14 The women said to Naomi, Praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a kinsman redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. 15 He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you and who is better to you than 7 sons, has given him birth. 16 Then Naomi took the child, laid him in her lap and cared for him. What a beautiful story of love and redemption. Naomi, who had changed her name to Mara, or bitterness, is given a son. Her name and the name of her family will live on. She will be cared for in her old age. Ruth, a Moabite woman, is accepted and has a husband who loves her and will protect her. God has orchestrated the events sounding this story so that they happened to come back at the time of the harvest. Ruth happened to glean from the field of a man who happened to be a kinsman redeemer. Boaz happened to have heard the good report about Ruth and happened to fall in love with her. The closer relative happened to not want to redeem the land or Ruth. God happens to work. In the lower story of Naomi, Ruth, and Boaz, things work out. But remember, God is working out his upper story at the same time. Boaz is the redeemer for Ruth, but God has promised that the ultimate redeemer would one day come through the nation of Israel. All of these Old Testament stories point to this redeemer. The Bible tells us that this redeemer would be born in Israel, and it goes on to tell us that he would be born of the tribe of Judah. In fact, we are told that he will be born in the city Bethlehem. Let's read on in Ruth chapter 4 verse 17. The women living there said, Naomi has a son. And they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. But now if you look over in the New Testament to the book of Matthew, we read in Matthew chapter 1 verse 1. A record of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the deliverer, the ultimate kinsman redeemer. We were slaves to sin, we were outsiders, and we had lost our inheritance in Adam. We were in need of a redeemer. And Jesus came to redeem us, and he bought us back. And just like Ruth became the bride of Boaz, we become the bride of Christ if we accept his invitation to be our kinsman redeemer. Not only is God working out his lower story for Ruth and Naomi, but God is also working out his upper story with us in mind. For, God goes out of his way to include a foreigner, a pagan Moabite, in the genealogy of Jesus. This should remind us that God not only wants to redeem us, but it is also his plan to use all of us and bring his plan to redeem others. If you don't believe that God went out of his way to include an outsider, a Moabite in the lineage of Jesus, listen to this. Do you know who the mother of Boaz was? Matthew chapter 1 verse 5, Salmon the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab, Boaz the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth, Obed the father of Jesse, Rahab, the harlot in Jericho who hid the spies and confesses that the God of Israel was God, is the mother of Boaz, from whom Jesus would come. Boaz, who took Ruth an outsider in, knew what it was like to be an outsider. His own mother had been accepted into God's family. God could have chosen anyone to bring Jesus through. But he chose messed up outsiders. Do you ever think that you are too messed up to be used of God? Just ask Ruth and Rahab and think again, but now let me ask you. What does this have to do with your life today? Each one of us, happen, to have people around us who, like Ruth, are feeling like outsiders, like they are rejected. They don't know where they belong or where they are going. And as Christ followers today, we are to be like Boaz. We are to be agents of hope and help. We are, like Boaz, to extend help and hope even at great cost to ourselves. God has redeemed us, and we are to use what we have to show others that God loves them and is willing to redeem them. 3 weeks in the making, and this is the Lord's message for this Lord's Day. Go out this week and be a blessing and be blessed. For the more you are a blessing, the more you will be blessed. Thank you all for hanging in there and for watching today. We will see you all next week. Thank you.